Welcome back to the Egg Aviator Podcast. I'm Andy, the Valley Egg Pilot. This is episode number 3. We're sitting down with our sponsor today, Travis Am from American Designs. We're going to get to know him a little bit, talk about his experience and the business that he has going right now. And I roped him into talking a little bit about a bad experience he had because we haven't shared any of those yet. So lucky dog for him. We're going to get to hear about a wire strike he had, and maybe I'll be generous and throw my hat in the ring too and share a bad experience so he's not alone. Anyways, the Egg Aviator Podcast spools up now. So, Travis is sitting down with me today. He made it all the way to the Great White North from Kansas. Travis, how you doing?
Doing good.
Doing good. Glad to have you here. Typically, this is when I'd give you your 2-3 minute plug, but because you're sitting in front of me and we're going to talk about your business, you're going to get the whole hour long today. So, let's get to know you a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about your background, you know, where you came from and kind of how you got into the industry?
Yep. Yeah, I'm from Mayville, North Dakota, I guess. No aviation background in the family, so I just basically crop duster woke me up every morning on the farm. Dad farms and stuff back home. UND was the closest aviation school I knew of. I didn't know anything, so I jumped in, found out it was more of an airline based school.
Yep.
Stuck with it, graduated, and then kind of got brainwashed into thinking I was going to the airlines. When I graduated, they weren't hiring. And I think the highest paid job was Piedmont Airlines, and they paid $26,000 a year. And you come out of there with $100,000 in school loans, it's, I don't know how anybody actually survived that period in time.
This is kind of prior to the big airline pilot shortage that probably
came a couple years later. 2009, graduated. Ended up going up to Alaska, got my seaplane rating, went up there, and found out I liked the dirt more than the ocean. Mm-hmm. Came back, flight instructed, did some contract students and stuff like that, which were actually really good students. I'm still kind of confused on where I wanted to go, I guess, after everything. Talking to, actually, a buddy of mine, Rob S. Leeson, he's back here in Minnesota now.
Yep.
We were up at Joe Black's having a drink, and I was talking about, you know, just the language barrier between the Chinese and talking to approach and center and stuff, and he goes, you know what I do? He goes, I put my earphones in my ears and I go to work and don't talk to anyone all day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, I'm going back to ag. That's where I started.
Yep.
So then I had to figure out how to do it, I guess, was the tough part. So I started cold calling people. I talked to the people who I got my tailwheel endorsement from, Dan Geist, actually, over in Crookston.
Yep, you know where I got mine. Yep, probably in the same airplane, patches.
Yep, yep. So I said, hey, Dan, how do I get a job? And he says, go to the national convention, find a guy with gray hair, and ask him for a job.
That's the exact same thing he told me.
I said, okay. So just so happened to be my other buddy, Tanner Sutvik. He's a aviation mechanic in Devil's Lake. He's growing really big, too. He's getting into hot sections and stuff. So he's getting really big in North Dakota for ag aviation. He says, Trap, going to the national, you want to go? Yep, and there was him and about 12 other guys on the way there. I put my resume up on the board, had to pay to get in there. It's like $200, you know. I didn't hardly have any money in it at the time.
Yep.
So put my resume up on the board. Like I said, there's 12 other guys there, so it wasn't a business trip. It was a fun trip, you know.
Yeah.
And then a guy calls me the next day, says, hey, I'm interested. Do you want to talk? Mm-hmm. I said, yeah, where do you want to meet? So all back in the convention, so I had to pay another $200.
Go for another day. Yep.
You know, like I said, I didn't have any money at the time. Ended up with a job in Kansas, and then the guys who I'd cold called before kind of found out that I had a job. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh, wait, why don't you come talk to me, you know, why don't you come back? Just let's work something out. I'm like, well, I already told this guy in Kansas I'm going.
Yep.
I'm going. And that was I was going to be flying a 401 with a Walters conversion on it.
Okay.
So right to the turbine.
Snow piston time for you.
Yeah.
So how was that hopping right into the Walters? Like I've never flown one, but I know Jess has told me about his Walters Thrush, and they're kind of a little underpowered, but that was on a Thrush, not a 401.
Yeah, it was a hot rod, I guess, and people say it was, but I didn't do a turbine transition. So basically, they had a pilot there, so I was one of two pilots. He took the airplane up, brought it around, and said, "Here you go." And they put me in it, and I said, "Oh," I said, "Well, how do you shut it off?"
Yeah. Somewhere right now, an insurance agent is cringing.
Yeah. And that was my turbine transition. So I got in it and I took off. And they were lagging the power right off the bat. But overall, the airplane flew really nice. And I really do like the way the air tractors fly.
Yep.
I mean, that was the easy part. The hard part was learning how to spray without anyone in there and no prior training with light bar or anything. I've sprayed with ground rigs with light bars, but never in an airplane. So the boss says, "Well, just take it up high and practice up there." But that was probably the worst advice I've ever had, because there's no reference. Yeah, there's no visual reference. So you're sitting up there in space trying to figure out how to stay on a line. Like, oh man, this is impossible. So then I started, doing back to backs and stuff in the fields, and they got a little bit easier.
Yep.
And we had a really good wheat run when we started that year. So I ended up spraying a lot. And so I went from, okay, I got to be at least 80 feet within the line at like a half mile, or I got to turn around and come back around. Yeah.
Yep.
But it just got better from there, I guess. I guess that's my story on how I got into it. But said it was a learning curve right from the start. My boss was probably 60-something at that time. So that's how they learned.
So you did find the guy with the gray hair.
Yes. No hair.
Actually. No hair. Awesome.
Yep.
So I did want to ask, a lot of people probably do know about the University of North Dakota. I'm very familiar from it. I went through their program too. Same procedures you probably went through. I just did it in Crookston, but yeah, it's quite the airline indoctrination place. But do you think that there are some positive things that you could take away from your experience at UND and apply it to ag, or was it just a little... I know for me it was a little monotonous some days because it's not really what you're going to be doing.
I'd say coming out of there, I had more knowledge than most aviators out there. Mm-hmm. Right now, I probably forgot half of it.
Yep.
So I came out of there with the CFII. You go from that airline mentality to crop duster mentality. And it's just like, it just blows your mind what people are actually doing versus training environment.
Right.
Especially UND. Yeah.
Well, that's one thing that was one of my gripes when I was there all the time, is that it's like you're taking these students, they're being taught by people who have never left the training environment. And then, like I said, they're becoming CFIs that have never left the training environment. And I even remember when I started to learn how to fly a Citabria at Wilbur Ellis, and we were running between load sites with that thing, when nobody was telling me when I should go and not go, and when, they have the parameters in place, right, for weather and stuff. Well, if it's this and this, you're not going flying today. If it's this and this over here, you're not going on this cross country, where it was like, oh, I'm finally out here where I can be an idiot and screw up because nobody's watching over me. And I ended up in a couple thunderstorms and stuff like that. And I came back to start working on my CFI, and I was like, you guys really need to send some pilots out into the real world for a little bit and put some pressure on them and take the restrictions off, because it just feels like you're so protected that you can't make a mistake. And then the real world's kind of scary when you first run into it. But an ag is really that's really the real world. I don't know. It's such a tight environment that if you're coming from UND, not saying that you can't, I mean, you did it. You came from UND, you became an ag pilot, but it's not really a similar environment at all.
Right. I mean, even just the simple things, and we're going to go over here, eat a cheeseburger and put gas on.
Yeah.
You might have done that, but you don't even feel comfortable doing it because they just took care of you.
Pretty much. Yeah. Yeah.
Or even a simple thing like when I was up in Alaska, I had never flown a different airplane than a UND airplane. So you get into a Pacer or a Beaver or something else, and it's like, well, what do you say to the tower? You know, it's not Sue.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't even know.
Yeah.
You
know? I have to say November, right? Yeah. Before I, yeah.
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 Or this is Piper or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Just stupid little things that a guy never would even think about.
Right. Yeah. And I, not to bash UND, they're really good at making airline pilots.
Yeah.
They know it's an airline pilot factory is what we call it. I mean, they can pump them out, but yeah, I mean, even in Crookston, it was a little bit more laxed, and it really shows. You probably get to experience it a little bit when you come help us during the summertime, that you grow up in that towered environment where somebody's telling you what to do all the time, and then you go to an uncontrolled environment, and it's like, what do I do now? My favorite thing is when they're all on one runway, and then you decide to come in and land in the opposite direction, even though they're spacing the pattern forward or whatever, or you take runway 2-1 or whatever instead of 3-1. And if you want them to leave, just do that, because they just can't handle the confusing traffic.
That's a little confusion.
Yep. No. So
yeah, especially you get up to some of these smaller airports, and there's 10 air tractors flying off of just a little airport. You know, everyone's got to work together to figure out how to do it. You put one Cessna in there, and they're going, "Oh my God!"
Yep. Yeah, I know. This is a good story. So. When I was flying out of Fisher, we flew out of Fertile, south of Crookston Airways, and Fertile and Warren are on the same radio frequency.
Oh,
and you know who sprays out of Warren, and he's deaf. So I'm in Fertile one day, I'm coming in, I hear two UND guys up in Warren, they're going back and forth, announcing every single position, and all of a sudden I just hear one guy on downwind yells to the guy on final, "Hey, there's an air tractor cutting you off, go around, And you hear the guy on the radio, "Oh, yeah, Sue, whatever's going around. Screw you, crop duster. Yeah, just cut everybody off and do what you want." And he's just chewing his ass on the radio. And he finally got done yelling, and I said, "Well, he didn't hear a lick of that because he's deaf." And then the radio just went silent. They didn't answer me. They both left.
Yeah.
No, it's funny.
Yeah, they'll have to send it over text.
Yeah. Well, that's a pretty awesome story. Yep. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing now. So you went and worked in Kansas for quite a while. So have you been working at the same place in Kansas for?
Yeah, I've been with it started as a private operator sold to a co-op down in Western Kansas. So when I got down there, we had two 401s with Walters on them. That year, that pilot that had been there quit. So it's just me left there. So then the next year I had to get into herbicide, basically all on my own. I mean, I called that other pilot just to see, I'm like, okay, what do I do when there's something next to it? How much do I leave? You know, how much? I mean, it was an unknown, and my boss was just, do it. You know,
yeah.
So hangar talk was a big part of my learning,
right?
I guess. So yeah, I flew for that co-op, and now I mean, we since I've been there, we have seven. We've had nine, and now we're back down to seven. But we fly from Eastern Colorado to Missouri now.
Okay.
And so it's a lot of traveling. Obviously, I end up in North Dakota. Right when I started, it was all homemakers. We didn't travel at all. And it seems like more competition, and the less wheat down there, the more we had to spread out. And
right.
But yeah, right now it's pretty big. It might be too big. So
then from there, now you started your own thing. So you're going on your own now.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, funny story. So, well, I guess to start the whole thing, we're down there, and family is up in North Dakota.
Yeah.
And we had a little scare. We thought me and my wife were going to have triplets.
Yeah, that's scary.
No grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought for a month we were having three babies.
Yeah.
With no help.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, my God, I need a bigger car, a triple stroller, three car seats, a bigger house.
Yeah.
And no help.
Yeah. This doesn't work at all for you, because for 4 months out of the year, you are basically unavailable and your wife is on her own.
Yes.
Yep. Yep.
Especially being on the road, you're not even around, so the neighbors and stuff are helping.
Yeah.
And everything. Found out later the ultrasound machine was actually messed up and we were only having one. But in that time, the operator in my hometown called me and he said, "Hey, I am selling this year. The pilot doesn't want my operation." He says, "Are you interested?" I said, "Well, yeah."
Yep.
"Yes, I am. You know, I got to get closer to home." Ended up getting outbid by a co-op. Might be some irony into that, I guess. But I couldn't compete with that checkbook, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. Quite a bit back in that.
Yes. Ended up finding another deal. That deal fell through after hot section. Guy had put a pile of money into this engine, and so he thought it was good. I said, I'll buy it depending on hot. Mm-hmm. Well, that didn't pan out for him. So now I bought my own airplane, 602 with a 60. They're a little cheaper than the 65.
Right.
And I'm going to try to give it a go.
Give her a go.
We'll see how it goes. I'm really nervous.
Yeah. I can imagine. I can only imagine how nervous you are. Yeah. Well, that's pretty exciting, though. I mean, I think every egg pilot is always kind of thinking about, well, I'd like to do my own thing someday, and I feel like that, too. I would love to do my own thing one day, and it's kind of exciting that you're getting to do that. But, yeah, I can only imagine what the nerves are like. So what do you think you're going to be? So you're moving up in our neck of the woods. You're only going to be about an hour or two to the south. So you're pretty much going to be dealing with the same country as we are.
So basically, being on the road, when we started decreasing in work at home, I kind of went on my own, and that's how I ended up actually helping you guys. Like I said, my buddy Tanner, he's been a godsend through this whole thing for me. He says, hey, these guys are looking for help. Can you got time? I said, yeah, I'm doing nothing. You know, I'll come up there. So came up. So actually, I talked to a couple guys, and a buddy of mine, Kevin Forrest, said, yeah, get up here and get the test done. You know, that was the only way to get a license right away, was to go take the test.
In North Dakota.
Yes. Yep. So I called the NDSU Extension office and talked to him. I said, okay, I can fly right into Fargo today. I had a hell of a tailwind. So I got to Fargo from Goodland in about 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And my father-in-law picked me up, brought me to the testing site, did the test, and had like 10 minutes before they closed, before handed the test in. Mm-hmm. And so what was it, like 3:50, handed it in. 4 o'clock, she calls me and says, you're good to go. So I flew right to Langdon and started helping Kevin, you know, and that's how I got up in the area.
Yep.
So I guess my plan is basically to keep helping everybody that I've been helping.
Right.
And then try to build up my own acres slowly, because, like I said, it's tough to compete with the co-op money and big money of other operators.
And the area that you're coming into now previously hasn't had a huge aerial presence, correct?
No, there's nobody on the field. I hooked up with a guy who owns the FBO, so I'm going to try build acres back home in my hometown and this other town that I'm going to be in.
Okay.
So we'll see how it goes. The primary focus will be just helping guys.
Right.
It seems like everybody needs an extra half an airplane.
Everybody hits that point in the year.
Yep. Yeah. So if they don't have to buy an airplane and hire a pilot, it's better for them in the long run.
Yep. Yeah, it's just so many acres at one point in time that you can't justify buying a plane just to cover them.
Yep.
And, you know, you could have a Pawnee sitting around and say, well, I'll cover my extra acres with this, but that ain't big enough either. So you got to call a guy with a little bit bigger plane and get in here and give me a hand so I can get all this work done on time.
Yep. So, yeah, and even it seems like the gas airplanes, I've had buddies with Cessnas and stuff, like, hey, can you get me in somewhere? I'm like, well, nobody, no offense, but nobody wants that airplane there unless you're running with other Cessna operators or something, you know?
Yeah.
Because nobody even has avgas.
Hardly, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. No, I remember my first season, we had a gentleman come help us from South Dakota, and he called, and he's like, hey, can one of you guys come give us a hand? And I said, well, our 502 guy is off somewhere else, and I said, I'm it. You want a Cessna? Probably not. Yeah, probably not. No, we don't. As bad as I wanted to go to South Dakota, Nebraska, and start spraying a little bit of corn, my 80 acres an hour, if that, was not really what they were looking for. Maybe a little bit more than that. But just for the guys that might be new to the industry or don't know, a lot of guys travel on the road during the season, so Travis is talking about home acres. So home acres are basically the acres you're spraying out of the airport that you're flying out of. And when we have downtime during the year, just like in North Dakota, our wheat run comes, and typically about the time our wheat run's finishing up, the corn run's starting down in the Corn Belt, and folks are getting busy and they need a hand. So we'll hop on the road. I haven't done it. My boss does it. And go get some extra acres in. And it's a really good way to, if you're having a bad year at home and you can go give somebody a hand, it's a great way to get a little extra money in the checkbook to make sure you can cover everything for the year and maybe make a profit. On top of that, you know, if you got a, from an operator's perspective, if you got a couple pilots that haven't been getting enough acres for the years to satisfy them, you can send them on the road, get some extra acres in that way. And then that there's kind of a, that doesn't just happen for everybody either. I mean, when you're talking about going on the road and helping somebody, that's kind of through relationships, really. It's about knowing people. Like, you know, you knew Tanner. Tanner works for Kevin. Kevin needed help so bad. You came up and helped Kevin. You know, you met my boss, Jess, and things like that. Built a good relationship with those guys. And, you know, now when they need a hand, you're the first guy they call. And then that works back and forth. When you get behind, then hopefully you're giving me a call because hopefully I'm going to go on the road this year, Jess. And, well, that's all up to him. But anyways, so yeah.
Another thing about being on the road too is you get to see how everybody else operates.
Yeah.
As far as efficiency and mapping, how everybody's doing it. I mean, if you're just stuck in one place, you did it how your boss did it.
Yeah.
And how he saw it done. But when you go on the road, you really, it opens your eyes to see how everyone's different.
Right. No, and that's the thing is when you're going to help somebody, usually they're so busy that you're really seeing their operation get tested, and you get to see the strengths and the weaknesses. So so that's pretty exciting. Going on your own, we'll have to have another podcast in a year or two and see check in and see how it's going.
See who else I'm working for at the time.
Yep. Travis has been the sponsor of our podcast so far through his company, American Designs, and we're going to talk a little bit about what he's trying to do there, what all products he offers and stuff like that. So let's go to the beginning, storytelling time. So how did American Designs get started?
So basically in the winters down there, I work for a co-op, so they want to keep you busy. After probably our second year, we started our own maintenance facility.
Mm-hmm.
Hired an IA, and so I started helping him every winter. So I've been doing that for probably about 8 years, I suppose, helping with Daniels. And I don't have an A&P or anything. I've just been doing it.
Yep.
So I've been to flight safety, line and base, and I feel pretty comfortable, and I learned a lot of sheet metal through just learning, working with our mechanics. But so generally, we're doing all of our maintenance, and then once we're done, I'm just kind of sitting around for something to start so we can start spraying, you know.
Yeah.
A buddy, Bo, up in Nebraska, had mirrors on there, and I always gave him crap about it, like a lot of those things, you know, and they were always some janky-looking things on there. It was like just like bent up stainless pipe, you know, with a mirror bolted on there. They looked terrible. So I started cutting up some aluminum. And so we got bandsaw and TIG and a lathe and a mill at the hangar where I'm working. And came up with my first design that's not actually the ones I'm selling. But so I sent Bo a picture and he bought one. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So I built five of them and I had to hand cut them with a bandsaw. Drill them, TIG them, cut threads on the lathe, and I think I made like seven of them, and they took me a couple days.
Yeah.
Like, man.
Pretty inefficient.
This is, it's cool, but.
Pretty slow going.
Yeah. Yeah, so then I drew up kind of what I wanted with the design. So I talked to a buddy in Goodland there who said, yeah, I got this guy up in Minneapolis. You give him a design, and he'll turn it out, and a month later, he'll send you the part and see if you want it. Okay, cool. Well, that's easy. So made the drawing, sent it to this guy, and a month or two goes on and nothing. You know, so I call him. He's like, oh, yeah, just move into a new building. We'll get it done. A month or two goes by again and nothing. And finally, I'm just like, man, how can I do this myself? And then this is where I started learning. I'm like, man, there's so many businesses out there that operate. I don't know how they continue to stay in business. As a crop duster, if you mess up a day, they're going to the competition.
Yeah.
It's like, holy crap, you know?
Yeah.
So anyways, I downloaded this free CAD program and started drawing and got on YouTube, and it was terrible. I'm like, oh my God, there's no way I could do this.
Yeah.
So I contacted the college professor in Goodland there. It's a tech school who teaches this type of stuff. I said, hey, do you guys have any online classes or anything like that?
Yep.
And he says, no, we don't. He says, but if you want to get in the CAD, we recommend this Fusion 360. Mm-hmm. Said, okay. Downloaded that, got on YouTube again, And this was the program. I mean, it was easy.
Yeah.
And I just took someone, you know, put together a 30-day free course for Fusion 360.
Yep.
If you want to learn CAD, do that. Because, mm-hmm. and it's just easy. And in the meantime, that's only part of the puzzle, right? So I bought a 3D printer. And, like, this is just because we didn't have any wheat to do. I'm just sitting here, like, what can I do? What can I do now, yeah. you know? But now you can take this CAD file, put it in the printer, and then hold it in your hand.
Yeah.
Like, okay, is this going to work or is this not going to work?
Yeah.
Well, okay, I need to change this, change that, hit print, walk away, come back the next day. It's sitting there built in the garage, you know? It's working 24/7.
Yep.
So that's where that started. So I started printing with ABS. And I'm like, man, these things are really strong.
Yeah.
I had that done, and then I found out there's a lot of on-demand manufacturers. So you can just send them your CAD file and say, I want 50 or 100 of these things in anodized aluminum, and they'll ship them to you.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy crap, you can really do whatever you want.
Right.
You know, you don't have to have the big CNC machine sitting in the shop. So I sold some of the 3D printed mirrors and some of the aluminum mirrors. And I had the 3D printed mirrors on my airplane. Came up here. I had been running for 4 months, no problem.
Yeah.
Same day, both mirrors fell off. I'm like, oh, no. And I gave you a set.
Yeah.
I think Jess bought a set of the the plastic ones.
Yep.
And one of them broke. But I didn't know at the time what was going on. So the few people, I think I only sold like six of those.
Yeah.
I refunded them immediately, 100%. Like, sorry.
Yeah.
I said, I'll give you a deal on some aluminum ones. You know, they worked until now. It must have been something with the
bug stuff. Mine was a bird strike.
Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't stand a chance. And you know what? They might have made it the whole season. I got to throw this in there. This is a good story. So the day that happened, we were doing wheat. We just started doing wheat and barley. And me and Jess both take off at the same time. He goes to one field, I go to another. I show up at my barley field and it's soybeans. And I call, I'm like, yeah, this is not a barley field. Where do I need to go, actually? Well, here he is. He's doing half section. And I've got about a 3/4 mile long quarter that tees off his half section right across the road. I get over there and I'm like, hey, I'm going to be working right underneath you. I could have tied these three fields together. That was the first thing he was mad about. But we were just talking on the radio. Okay, how are we going to make this work? Well, you're just going to run it east and west, and I'm going to run it north and south, and when I'm turning over your head, don't pull up. So we started working, and funny thing, second pass across the field, I made the AB, came around, I'm lining up on my C, he comes, pulls up over my head, and I'm about halfway across the field, and I look up, and I can see the red airplane up there, yep, and I look out in front of me, and I can see this flock of blackbirds, and I'm like, hopefully they'll get out of the way. They're tooling around in front of me. Get out of the way. Get out of the way. I'm like, shit, I'm going to roll right through this flock of blackbirds. And I'm like, I was about ready to pull up, and I looked up over my head. Here's this great big white and red airplane about 100 feet over the top of me. I'm like, well, I'm hitting the flock of blackbirds. And I so much as blinked, I heard a whap, and that mirror was gone. It just vanished a second. It was hilarious. But
sorry about that.
No, it's all right. We have set in aluminum ones. Yep. Those took a couple pigeon hits. They did all right.
Yeah, no. So basically, now that the capability is there and you know how to draw, that's probably the key to the whole manufacturing thing, is that you can draw or hire someone to draw.
Mm-hmm.
But the best thing about the 3D printer is you can draw in a test fit.
Yeah.
So like I said, somebody had commented on my mirrors and said, well, these step extensions are the next thing, you know.
Yeah.
And I was looking, and they just had a little chunk of metal welded onto their step. I'm like, man, there's not a lot of people that are going to want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, people like bolt-on stuff.
I want to get something in a bag that has instructions and bolts in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, well, I could probably do that, and it'll fit in my printer.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it probably took 10 versions to try to get that curve right, and I sent people, and like, well, what do you think about this? What do you think about this?
Yeah.
Is this too far out? You know, so I made the step, and then I was thinking about the windshield washer cap. You know, I'm like, man, that just sucks. You're standing up there, and you don't have a screwdriver, you know, to put some freaking water in this thing. You know?
And after after 2 years, it's so hogged out that you can't even get a screwdriver in there anymore.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. I'm like, man, we could do this, you know, just things like that. And I would really like to, I mean, if you have an idea, I can draw and we can come up with it and we can share the profits on it.
Yeah.
If someone has an idea out there that you're just kind of making in the garage or whatever, we can turn this into a process and and get them made, you know, through CNC.
Be able to make them nice, make it efficient, and then now on top of that, that kind of, we can roll right from there into the website talking about how to distribute them now. So not only are you making this stuff, but you've also started the online store, American Designs, Alpha Mike. Bravo, E-R-I-C-A-N, got to clarify.
Yep,
and so do you want to talk to us a little bit about the American Design website and what you're doing with that?
Yeah, so basically, same thing. You know, like there's a guy in Iowa, he's making a jack pad for the air tractor, which is awesome, but he's selling on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
And then they run out every once in a while, but you know, I think they sell a lot of them. But then everybody's asking on Facebook or whatever, like, hey, where can I get this thing? You're like, where do I got to go? And then you go there and you buy one. So I was like, if I could just get everybody together who's making their own custom stuff, we'll put it in one place, then people can visit one place and buy it and run a credit card through, and everything's professionally done.
Right.
You know, so that's why I set the website up. So then I was trying to expand it. I got the AFS guys on board. So I'm waiting on them. And then I was trying to get through to like Transland and Kawak. And them guys now is getting, oh, you're not a air tractor dealer. Stay out, you know.
Yeah.
So I got in through a back door through an air tractor dealer. Now I can sell those parts too.
Yep.
So that's what I was just trying to get a one-stop shop for common items, I guess.
Yeah. Because for the younger people that are listening that probably haven't had to go on the hunt for a part when it's during the middle of the season and you need it like 5 minutes ago. You got to make about 15 phone calls like we've talked about. Well, I called so-and-so, they don't have it. I called so-and-so, they don't have it. I called Peg at Air Tractor, and Peg doesn't, she doesn't have it. Or I did. Somebody run over to Hillsboro. We need to get this part right now. You know, basically what you'd like to do is make it so that I need this right now.
Yep.
Goes online, in stock, ordered now, you know. And do it from a cell phone, do it from a computer. Do you want to talk about some of the things that you've got on there so far right now at all? Or,
well, just right now, like I said, I got the mirrors. That kind of started the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
The step extensions, a lot of people like those.
Yeah.
A lot of the older guys really like those. It's only an inch and a half extension.
Yep.
But it makes a lot of difference just for grip, you know, stepping in there.
Yep. And you're talking, and the steps that Travis is talking about are for air tractors,
just
correct?
Just air tractors. Newer air tractor steps.
Okay.
I've had a few people ask me about thrush steps, and I guess if there's enough demand, I'll take my time and draw some out.
Right.
But I've only had maybe two guys ask for them. I don't know. Yeah, like I said, the visor. So the visor, Ram Mount had their own visor, and I bought that initially, but it's like 3 times as big as you need, especially for the ag plant.
Yep.
So I put that visor in the table saw, cut it up, and like, oh, it's not very nice.
Yeah. You know?
So then on that fusion program, I drew the visor, measured the holes, and then had them laser cut out in New York. And so that's where that came in. There's more ideas on the way. Some I'm waiting for other people for things.
Yeah.
I had another idea. Number one, I was thinking of putting classifieds on there that you aren't paying $400, like make it a free classifieds just to get more traffic to my site. Also, I had another idea where it seems like there's a lot of people asking or looking for help.
Yep.
And they don't know where to go. So, like, again, as people go to Facebook, you know, or make it's a phone call to your mechanic to try find other guys who know someone who could help.
Yeah.
So, I was thinking of making like an interactive map where, okay, I need help here. Let's put a dot on the map. This is what I'm looking for. And you can click on it to find that guy and help him.
Yep.
All basically just more so to drive more traffic to my site. It's a little selfish, but at the same time, it's providing a surface or a service for crop dusters, I guess. But
that's a pretty good idea. First time I heard it. It's kind of like this podcast. I mean, the whole reason that I even started it was because there isn't shit for information on our industry. Yes. I mean, anywhere, you know, the NAAA has a really nice website and they've got a lot of stuff organized on there and everything. But as far as getting down to the nuts and bolts and getting your hands greasy, you know, doing the job, there really isn't any information on it. So that's why I started this, and it's kind of the same thing for you too. I mean, when you're talking about the like the interactive map, trying to find help, there's like five different platforms that people are using for this. You got Facebook, Ag Air Updates. You got them too. That's a little bit more organized, but yeah, you kind of just want to get it all centralized, one spot. We're not such a big industry that we can have six different places, or we need six different places to facilitate a bunch of different things. Yep. So, well, if people want to get a hold of you, they just go to the website.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I get a lot of Facebook messages like, hey, I'll take four mirrors and this many steps. And like, well, here, I'll just send you a link, and then it takes care of everything, tags, right, everything for you.
Yep.
But that's the point of the whole deal. So then we aren't doing this, here I got PayPal, I got Venmo,
yeah,
whatever thing, and then, oh, yeah, by the way, this is the tax. Oh, crap, sorry, I didn't collect tax on that.
Yeah, so just head on over to the website.
Make it easier.
Yep. Alpha Mike Bravo, E-R-I-C-A-N.
Yeah, and it's actually, if you say my name right, it's Norwegian, it's Om. So if you say American, it's why I did that.
Okay.
So everyone, even my father-in-law, or my stepdad is like, Amber, and like, oh, you even know my name, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's why I had to call you before we did the first episode, because I was like, American? No, yeah. Yep. So, like I said, I roped Travis into sharing a bad experience with us, because I told everybody at the beginning of the first episode of the podcast that not only I want to cover a lot of topics, but one of the biggest things is talking about safety and sharing our experiences, good and bad, so we can learn from them. I won't be a dick. I'll be the first guy to go on, since it's my podcast. I'll be the guy that shares a bad experience for the first time. So one morning during the wheat run up here in northern Minnesota, it gets pretty cold here in the mornings. And one thing that I got in a bad habit of in the Cessna was that when it was cold in the morning and cool at night, those first and last loads of the day, I could usually get away with taking as big a load as I wanted to because I had the performance to do it. But it would warm up enough by the second load that I was already starting to back off. I was, you know, taking 160 gallons and 150 and 140, so on and so forth as the day went on. Well, the airstrip that I flew off of my first year was built for egg cats. It was not built for air tractors, and it was not built for Cessnas. Not built for model wing airplanes, definitely built for biplanes. And it's built on a farm. The south end of the airstrip is open, so if you take off to the south, you know, you don't have to worry about hitting a wire or whatever. It's just wide open field. But if you take off to the north, that's where the farmyard is. So there's a fuel tank right at the end of the runway. The next guy is loading right at the end of the runway. So if you're going to take off to the north, you better damn well have a good north headwind. So we get there in the morning, land. I'm trying to take into consideration, you know, what I'm going to do. We've got this really oddball kind of north, west wind that's probably trickling at like 2-3 miles an hour. And with the trees and the farm and everything there, I thought to myself, well, by the time I get up to the bins and the shop and the trees, I'm going to run out of that headwind. It's not going to be there anymore. And then I'm going to be headed towards all the equipment. And if I have to dump a load, I'm going to be dumping a load on the guy that's loading at the end of the runway. So I'm sitting there going, he probably won't appreciate that. I should just take off to the south. It's a light enough tailwind that I don't think it'll be too big a deal. Like I said, cold air made me cocky in the morning. I thought, you know, whatever. So we're getting loaded up, and the loader guy, he accidentally puts 10 more gallons in the airplane than I wanted. And for those of you out there with a ground sprayer or a bigger airplane, you might go, oh, well, 10 gallons, yeah, what's a big deal? Well, 80 pounds in a Cessna is a big damn deal. I mean, if I didn't eat breakfast in the morning and I was a little bit lighter, I probably could take a full load. But every pound counts in that damn thing, and they really do suck with a tailwind. Cessnas, at least from my experience, they are horrible taking off in a tailwind. So anyways, I just decide that, okay, it's cold enough, I can get away with this. There is a tailwind, but I don't think it's bad enough. And just pure inexperience and ignorance, I should have just took the 10 gallons off. I should have just grabbed a 2.5 gallon jug and started dipping it in the hopper and hauling the chemical out, because I got rolling down that runway. I got to the point where my tail usually starts to stand up, push forward on the stick. Nothing. I mean, just nothing. I hold on the ground a little bit longer, about three quarters of the way down the runway. I push forward again. Tail comes up off the ground. Tail stalls, comes back down. And I'm shitting my pants at this point, because the grass we had, it was about 2,000 feet of pavement, and then it was about 300 feet of grass, and the grass was coming up pretty quick. And I thought, well, maybe I can three-point this thing off the ground. So, well, if my tail wasn't going to fly, I should have known that that trying to do it that way wasn't going to work either. So I pulled back on the stick. I grabbed another notch of flaps, and the plane came off the ground. And I thought, oh, shit, I got this. And I kind of held it in ground effect for a second, but pretty soon the stick started to shake, the tail started to stall again, and then pretty soon, boom, I was back down on three tires, and I had about 100 feet of grass in front of me. And I want to throw a plug in for NAAA and PASS here. The year that this happened in the PASS program is when Fran from the flight school up in Canada, they had a whole, like, 20-minute session on dumping loads on takeoff. And I learned so much through that PASS presentation on dumping loads that at the beginning of my season, when I was learning how to fly the Cessna, I said, you know what, when I get comfortable in this plane, I need to start practicing dumping loads on takeoff, and dumping loads in the air too. So thank God I had practiced this a handful of times and I felt comfortable. It was just, when I saw the soybeans coming up to my tires, it was no question. My hand went right to the dump lever, and I threw it forward, and I pulled back on the stick, and it didn't take too much, and it started flying because I had the extra notch of flaps in full power, and I'm sure that 10 gallons came off, and I just popped right off the ground. So as soon as I popped off the ground, I closed the lever, and I have never been shaking so much before in my life, because I thought, man, if I could have held on to that load, but if I would have ended up in those soybeans, I could have been freaking end over end, or, you know, never made it off the ground. I could have rolled a half mile to the ditch for all I know. So that was my bad experience, one of them. So now Travis is going to tell us a little bit about one of his, and we're going to see what we can take away from that. So I'll let you go ahead and take it away.
Yeah, we were talking before this and about bad experiences, and I said, well, I guess I have bad experiences from day one, and I got bad experiences, you know, at the end of the deal. Actually, I got another one too. I'll maybe tell. I think it's important. So I'll maybe give you two.
Sure.
This one just happened this fall. So the one that I was going to talk about, this is probably year five, I suppose, and I'm flying a 602 with a -65. We built a new hangar, and I was over there managing this new location. So I was over there by myself, new loader, office people, everything. Went out, started out the day, I don't know why, I ended up having a half section. Went out there, sprayed it, came back. Load guy says, we forgot to put some chemical in the hopper. Like, yeah. Oh, come on, you know, this is, like I said, it's another run, you know. And
yeah,
you get kind of pissed off, and okay, right. Let's put it in there. Let's fix it. Go do it.
Got to go back and do it a second time.
Yep. So now I'm pissed off. Felt like I was behind the load, you know. And so go respray that one, come back. And it just so happened to be a farmer, the day before, he had me spraying his circle corners. Mm-hmm. And then the office guy comes out and he said, oh, this guy, he added the circle. And I had already started on the corners, you know.
Yeah.
Western Kansas circle corners are fairly large, you know, on a quarter, they're 15, or they're 45 acres, 40 acres.
Yeah, they're not like the smaller ones in Nebraska and Iowa.
So yeah, so you got to spray basically the whole quarter to do 40 acres.
Right.
I know I'm preaching in the choir on, especially the guys who, I mean, that might be a big field to some people, but.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I went back to that field, backed up my swath, and I elected not to circle a field because I was just there the night before. Come in, set back up on, I was past one, right next to the road, power lines on my right. So then I was just going to turn on and catch up to where I was on the corners and then finish the whole field through. But like I said, I didn't circle. I said, I don't need to. I was just here. Get halfway through the field and hit a line. They had a line going across the field, there was no road there, so you couldn't see the road or anything to show you that there was a line. But just the day before, I was there, and I went over it. I went over that line, but I completely forgot about it.
Yeah.
This was a brand new airplane. I think there were 70 hours on the 602. Broke a bunch of nozzles off, so I hit it. I don't remember a noise, but I could feel it turn a little bit. And looked out on the side, I'm like, oh man, do I got a wing over there? You know, like,
yep.
So I kind of slowly look over, like, okay, I got my wing.
Yep.
And then I could see the chemical coming out of the nozzles that were broke off. Couldn't shut it off. I shut the pump off, shut the money handle off, and it still kind of just siphoned out of there, I guess. Flew back to the airport, and I could see I didn't know how long at the time. I had power lines dragging from somewhere on the airplane, but I could see them behind me. You know, I could see them looking down.
Yeah.
And there was a run going on, so I said, okay, well, mistake number two, I elected to land on the grass to try to stay out of everyone's way. I should have just went on the main runway, which is long.
Yeah.
So I start coming in and start slowing down, and I look over, and that power line is kind of starting to sag. I'm like, well, I got to land over this other power line. Like, oh, no, I don't know how long I'm going to hit this other one with the line I'm dragging, you know?
Yep.
So I powered up, came over it, landed, and then it was only like 100 feet of line or something that was hanging there, but that took me out for a week or so while we had to patch that thing up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what did I learn? You know, it takes 2 minutes to look at a field, and it'll either cost you your life for a week or two during a big chunk of your income for the year.
Right. So what kind of damage did you end up causing? Did it hit the prop? Did you do any engine damage at all or no?
No, it didn't arc at all anywhere on the airplane. Maintenance shop, we basically pulled chip out, checked for magnetism on the beta ring. Like I said, there was no arcing on there. Put a hole in the wing, put a hole in the aileron, broke off some nozzles. Really got really lucky, actually.
Yeah.
And it was probably only because I was spraying next to that other line. I was probably a little higher than I normally would have been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I cost myself money and I cost the operator money in the end.
Yep.
For, like I said, a minute or 2 minutes.
2 minutes of running around. Yeah.
That's another thing that old Robbie told me when I was talking to him that night at Joe Black's. He said, you circle every freaking field you go to. No matter what, you circle. After you're doing it for a while, you think, oh, I know this field.
Yeah.
But things change and you forget.
I get in a bad habit of that during burn down because... Well, you know, herbicide and burn down work, it's like you might come back to a field four times.
Yep.
And it's like,
I don't need a circle.
I don't need a I've already been here three times. I'm coming here to patch up 5 acres, whatever. I'm just going to get in, get it done. I got to go ferry another 30 miles because the wind finally switched to the east for the first time in a week. Like, I'm just in a hurry. And I could see myself making that mistake. So I'm glad this is the nice part about talking about this is like, I'm going to take that. And now I said it on a podcast, so everybody can hold me accountable. Yep. So this year, during burndown, if I hit a wire, everybody can be like, well, hey, jackass, you you had a conversation with somebody about that. You probably should have took into consideration what you learned and what you said. But so you ended up, you didn't cut the wire with the airplane?
Yeah, the wire broke on the airplane, and the whip cut the holes in the wing and the aileron.
Okay.
It flew fine.
Yeah.
Got lucky, I guess.
Gotcha.
But this other one, you want to talk about the other one?
Sure.
This one I feel is, it's a whole different type of something that happened, I guess. So now this is last year. I've got 10 years in, eight or nine on a 602. And I was doing Gramox on a half circle of sunflowers. And the circle was facing towards a big, like metal structure power line, you know, plenty high.
Yep.
But in order to spray it, I elected to go underneath this big line. 60 acres, and then there was one tree. There's not very many trees in western Kansas, and I doubt it was living.
Yeah.
But it was on the south side, or the, which side was, that was on the north side of the circle. So the long side of the pivot was on the south side, and then the top of the circle was on the north with the tree at the end. One tree. You know, so I went under the power line, set the AB, came around, set the C right in front of the tree, came around, passed two or passed three, no problem. came around past four, and I kind of just decided to just kind of scoot around the tree, right, rather than fly over it. So I scooted around the tree, and I had, at this point, I had totally blanked out that this ginormous power line was right there. So I casually start pulling up, and I'm going, oh, my God, this giant power line's right here. So I push back down. Well, there's a structure. The whole giant structure is right in front of me.
Yeah.
And I go, oh, my God. You know, so I can't go up because I can't get over it.
Yep.
And I'm flying right at the structure. I mean, I totally blanked. So I kind of skidded, turned as high as I could turn under the line right next to the structure.
Yeah.
Over the highway. And like you were saying, man, I would have been probably white as a ghost in there. And kind of got my bearings back to get a look back, and there's this motorcycle going under the power line. I'm like, oh, man, I bet that guy thinks I did that on purpose. You know?
Yeah.
I was in there just shitting. And that was probably the end of the year. Too much comfort, not having my mind in the airplane, I would say.
Yeah.
That was.
That's
that was scary. That's the scariest thing about, like, actually known that I've avoided.
Yeah.
Completely knew it was there, though.
Right.
Just didn't even think about it.
Right. So this year, I guess I'll tell one more, too. We're only at an hour. When I got to working with Jess this year, we started talking about when do accidents happen. And he told me from his experience that when he's made mistakes and when guys that have been working with him, friends, made mistakes, it's kind of like you said. It's the end of something. It doesn't have to be the end of the year, but it can be, okay, this is the last day of my run helping these guys in North Dakota. I'm going to get to go back home tomorrow. I'm exhausted. I'm excited for this to be over. You start thinking about going home. Or for me this year, same thing. I'm working 2 hours away from home. We were building a house. I was coaching a trap shooting team back in Crookston too, so I was running back and forth trying to do that. And we planted late, so burndown was running late. I got all these things going on at one time, and I'm trying to be in two places at once. And one day, I woke up in the morning, I had two quarters of Roundup to do, one field of wheat, one of canola, and I was going to go home. So I start thinking about, shit, this is going to be nice. I'm going to get to go home today.
What am I going to do when I get home?
I'm going to get home. I'm going to start working on my house at 2 o'clock. I'm going to go to the gun club. I'm going to coach trap. And I'm going to be here the next day to work on my house again. And this is going to be pretty exciting. And I'm going to get to see my fiance for the first time in a month. So pretty excited about getting home. So I get finishing up this last quarter. And like I said, a big grin on my face all morning. I'm going home. And Jess calls me. He's like, hey, guy over in Lakota needs a hand. You want to go over there? And he gave me the option. I didn't have to go. He gave me the option. He said, do you want to go over there? Can I get it all done today? Because, of course, it's burned down. Yep, you can get it all done today. Okay, well, fine. I'll go do it. So head over to Lakota. And have you flown out of Lakota before?
Yep.
Okay, so there's a golf course on the west side of the runway, and Highway 2 is literally at the end of the north end. But it's always been kind of a weird airport. I talked to a couple other pilots that have flown there, and you can get some really wacky winds with the golf course being there. Well, anyways, just like you with your wire situation, it's like you forget about what's going on, and you're like, well, I'm going to try and be efficient or stay out of everybody's way. And I thought, well, I'm going to land with a tailwind and roll right up to the trailer and spin around, get loaded, and take off into the wind, right? And I'm on downwind, and I'm looking at the windsock, and I'm like, that's a pretty stiff tailwind. And this is not a long run. It's like a 3,000-foot runway. I mean, it's not extremely long, not extremely short, but either way, you don't have a lot of room if you end up being too fast. So I thought, hey, that's a really stiff tailwind. And that thought went through my mind, and I didn't do anything about it. I just kept right on going. I decided that I was going to land with the tailwind, and I kept right on going. And I start coming around, get on final, and I'm like, I am hauling ass right now. Like, I was cruising over. I looked down and I was going over the corn, and I'm like, wow, those rows are flying by. I'm scooting way too fast. And I thought about it. I thought, you know, I should just go around. And then I didn't. I just kept going. It was like I was so committed to landing that I just kept going. And then I'm getting to the threshold and I'm like, I am really hauling too much ass. So I grabbed the power lever, and for the first time flying that 402, I pulled that power lever all the way back to the stop, and the engine spooled down. And I start flaring. I don't know if I was off in outer space or what, but I flared way too high. I basically stalled onto the runway, and I smashed that airplane, three-pointed it onto the runway. First time I ever three-pointed the 402, and it was completely unintentional. And I bounced back up in the air, and I bounced up so high, I was like, This thing comes out of the sky right now, it is not going to end well. So I started pushing the throttle forward, and it kind of hung in the air for a while, it seemed like. But I pushed the power about halfway forward, nothing. And then the plane starts to sink, and I'm like, shit. And I slammed that thing all the way forward, and that was the biggest mistake I ever made. Wow, that thing finally came to life, and it really came to life. And I guess, thank God, it's a Dash 11, and it can handle what I did to it, but I didn't over-temp it or anything, but I definitely probably overstressed some stuff that it was just completely unnecessary. And then I spent the rest of the day, I remember going to the sunflower field I was going to go kill, and just thinking, I just about destroyed this airplane today, either on my horrible landing or I could have wrecked the engine. But that was it. It was like I was thinking about going home. And even though there was three different red flags that happened while I was coming in the final, I just ignored them all because I was in a different place. But after that happened, as soon as we got to the end of September and the end of the season came around one day, same thing. I was going to head home. Boss had told me, you can head home tomorrow if you want. We show up to the airport, and he's like, hey, I got a quarter of sunflowers you can get done today. And I'm like, nope. No, nope. I would love to go spray a gravy quarter of sunflowers right now, but you know what? My mind is so much in another place, it'd probably be better for both of us if I just went home right now. But, yeah.
I've done the exact same thing. Exact same thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably something you have to, you know, you get comfortable flying in with a tailwind and that one time bites you, and you're bouncing and you're waiting for that power to kick in.
And it's not
here. Here comes another bounce.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know what the people at the golf course were thinking, but they were probably pretty nervous for me too. Yep. But yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you do it all year, you get busy, and it seems like conditions are usually right. You can make the tailwind happen. Maybe you're more alert or whatever, and then all of a sudden you start thinking about going somewhere else, and then yeah, nips you right in the ass. But I told everybody we were going to cover some stuff, share some experiences that hopefully people can be safer and learn something from, and hopefully everybody can take away from our screw-ups. Keyboard warriors, stay at bay. People make mistakes, all right? You know, if anybody's out there going, you guys are a bunch of idiots because of what you did, I'll be waiting for your fuck-up too. So
guaranteed. It's coming.
It's coming. It just hasn't yet. Well, Travis, thanks for being on the podcast, and thanks for sponsoring the podcast. If it wasn't for our sponsorship, we wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation right now and sharing the information that we're sharing. So thank you for doing that. Thanks for sharing your experiences.
Yep. Yeah, well, thanks for having me on. Like I said, Andy had posted my mirrors on Instagram this summer, and he sold a couple in Canada that day, and he said, hey, you want to be a sponsor? So, well, hell yeah. I mean, you've already made me a little money, you know, so that's why I did it. And
yep.
The older people might not think it's important, but the younger people are listening to this.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
So,
well, if we can
grab me on.
Yeah. You know what? If we can help a few people stay on the right side of the grass by sharing this stuff, and people can make more informed decisions by learning somebody on here, then in my opinion, in the end, it was all worth it. So
for sure.
So, all right. Thanks again, everybody, for checking in with us. If you want to check out what Travis has to offer, again, head over to AmericanDesigns.com. That's Alpha Mike Bravo, ERICAN, Designs.com. Check them out. Make sure to leave us a review on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. I did discuss with Travis, we're going to be putting this on YouTube now for those of you that don't know how to find podcasts. Well, you're not listening to this right now anyways, I guess. But anyways, we're going to find a place for you to listen to it anyways. So make sure to keep up with what I'm doing on Instagram @ValleyEggPilot and on Facebook as well. hopefully I'll get a YouTube video for you guys out here pretty soon. So thanks again for checking in to the Ag Aviator Podcast. We'll see you next time.